This episode is brought to you by The Manor, a premier addiction treatment facility in the hills of Wisconsin's Kettle Moraine Forest. Their program offers a tailored approach to those struggling with addiction in a secluded setting with no more than 11 men and women. With highly personalized treatment focused on trauma, Dr. Chantel Thomas and her expert team offer an authentic experience, creating the kind of deep emotional change that's crucial for long-term recovery. If you or someone you love are struggling with addiction, call The Manor at 414-930-1930. That's 414-930-1930. You can learn more about The Manor by clicking the link in the show notes or by visiting discoverthemanor.com. Thank you for listening to The Path to Authenticity. My name's Tom Gentry. I think of this show as the opposite of small talk. You'll hear real conversations with real people who know who they are. We talk about what makes them who they are, how they became who they are, and how we might become truer expressions of who we are. Falling squares
on TV screens, still falling. I'm Leslie B., and this is The Path to Authenticity.
If this is your first time here, thanks for checking it out. If not, thanks for coming back. I'm Tom Gentry, and this is The Path to Authenticity. As I record this, it is Saturday, September 19th, 2020. As of this moment, in the United States, we have 6,730,653 confirmed cases of COVID-19 and 198,682 deaths. So, just, you know, one of the things that's really troubled me about this whole thing is just how it's been trivialized. I don't think it's something that we need to panic about, but I think we definitely need to look out for each other. And I wish there were more of us doing that. And, you know, last night, I was out running around and took a look at my phone as I was walking into a store and saw the news that Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg died. So I just feel really sad and scared of what's happening, where we're going. And, you know, it's just such a turbulent time. How do you prepare for a period of time like 2020? I don't know if you can. But anyway, I know we'll get through it. But again, we got to look out for each other. So, Leslie B., Jungian love coach. Had a great conversation with her a while back in episode 77. And if you listened, you know, I asked her to come back. And so here she is again. You know, the last episode, we talked a lot about her story and how she came to do this work. This episode, we get a little deeper in the weeds about the work itself. So, it's been a lot of fun talking to Leslie and doing these episodes. At the end of this, we talk about, you know, collaborating on a Facebook Live, and we ended up doing that just this past Thursday. So that's out there on my Facebook page. She'll be sharing it on Instagram in the coming days. Had a lot of fun with that too, both of us for the first time doing a live on Facebook. Anyway, Leslie's great, and you know, if you're like me, if you like to kind of dig deep and understand yourself and your motives and us as human beings, why we do what we do. And, you know, if you're someone who's always striving to better yourself and feel more deeply connected to yourself, then I think you'll enjoy this. So here you go. Leslie B.
Just the product of some bad seeds.
So Leslie, welcome back. Thank you so much for coming back.
Thanks for having me.
You're
back.
Welcome. You're welcome. I wish I had 3 or 4 hours the last time we wouldn't have had to do this, but I went back and listened to our other episode today, and I wanted to think about, if we're going to do a part two, what should we talk about? And I think I think it'd be good if I want to hear how you do this work with clients, how it plays out. So what would you say to that? How does it start?
Great question. Because I just wrote, you know, a brief little post today. And one of the ways I completed that post was saying, you know, even the most enlightened knowledge is useless if we can't actually use it and apply it in a practical way. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's great, wonderful knowledge. It's fun to know. And it kind of feels good. And it almost gives you like a hit to like, get a, you know, learn something you never thought of before. That's expands your mind. But again, if you can't use it, it's not going to change anything in our life. So application is always key. And I use this analogy too, because I think I told you before, my husband collects classic Porsches, and he's not, you know, a rich guy or anything like that. It's just something he's been extraordinarily passionate about since he was like 5 years old. And he just set his mind, like, I'm going to own one of those. Mm-hmm. And that's it. And I'm going to make it happen. And he did. Mm-hmm. And there's even more of a story behind that. But I love to use the analogy because he's so passionate about the car and why it's special. And he's into cars from the years of 76 to 82. So specifically turbos. Could tell you every part, every feature of the car, why it's different from other sports cars, how they performed. And I mean, literally, it's like, he's like a Porsche encyclopedia. So what I say to drive this point home about knowledge versus application is this. And, you know, he could sit here, I could sit here and tell you about the experience of driving a Porsche. I could tell you about the gearing, the acceleration. I could describe it in detail and you would follow me. Like, you would understand. Yep. Okay. I got what you're saying. I can picture it, but that's indirect knowledge. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you got into a turbo and drove it, mm-hmm. that's a direct experience of that knowledge. So it's almost like believing versus knowing.
Right.
And so when we talk about Jung's individuation process, the first thing to understand about the process is that, number one, it's not a quick fix to anything. And if people want like a 30-day and I'm there type of program, well, this isn't for them. Yeah. This is a lifetime process. And number two, if you don't apply what you learn, it will not change your life. Nothing will change.
Right.
Right. Okay. So that's like, you got to start there. Mm-hmm. So the second thing I try to describe as much as possible to help people understand is that their mind is not the same as their brain, first of all, because in the West, we kind of talk about them interchangeably. Mm-hmm. Because we are neuro, what is it? There's a model, a neuro biological social model. So we're trying to look at someone or look at ourselves and not ignore any of those, because they're all playing into who we are and, you know, why we do what we do and everything about the problems that we might have. It's all, you don't exclude any part of those, but to understand that the brain and the mind are distinctive things. And I could get into detail if you wanted, but for right now, we'll just say people need to know, oh, my brain is different from my mind. That's strange. And, you know, the mind, or what Jung called the psyche, which means soul. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't know that. I didn't know that. Has multiple aspects to it, which have individual functions. So if we understand our mind as functional, and not only that it's functional, but how it's functioning, it gives us a completely different understanding of who and what is creating this, what we call our life experiences, our circumstances, our good luck. I'm putting good luck in quotes, our bad luck, etc. So when we think about our, you know, our bodily organs, you know, your heart is functioning to keep you alive by pumping blood systemically through your body and, you know, supplying oxygen-rich blood to the organs and so on. Your kidneys are filtering toxins. Your liver is metabolizing substances and so on. Every organ has a function to keep you alive. In very much like manner, our psyche has functions that are also designed to keep us alive. And when we think about it, you know, at first glance, you think, well, but my body is more important because, you know, if my heart's not beating or if my life is threatened, then I could die. But if I feel rejected, I'm not going to die. But actually, our body and our mind body reads rejection and a threat to our life the same way. Mm-hmm. That's why we have that fight or flight response to rejection, much the same way we do have it when someone's chasing us.
Well, and it's funny because I was having this conversation with a friend earlier today, and, you know, I can't cite the science or anything, but medically we know that when the brain is physically traumatized, it reacts the same way as it does when we are emotionally traumatized. The physical traumatization and the emotional traumatization have the exact same effect on the brain.
That's super interesting. I just read an article not 2 weeks ago I can forward it to you. It was in psychology.org, I believe, Psychology Today. Mm-hmm. And it was talking about the fact that it's a myth that we only use 10% of our brain. Have you ever heard that myth or that saying?
Yeah.
So they have these three different, very sophisticated tools that measure the brain activity, you know, in different parts of the brain, it proving beyond any doubt from a scientific perspective that we use all of it. Mm-hmm. And most of the article talked about that. And then at the end, the author, you know, kind of talked about where he thought that myth might have come from. But it kind of illustrates your point that it's a living organ and it's interpreting danger, whether it's physical danger or perceived danger.
Right.
Yep. fascinating stuff.
Okay, so did I get you off track? You were on a
No, not at all.
Okay.
Nope. So once people understand like that their psyche or their mind is functioning to keep them alive, you know, the next thing is to sort of understand what those functions are. So we talked about the ego in I know on our last visit. And, you know, the ego, it's our sense of self. It's the I. It kind of creates this delusion that we're separate. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, like my body ends here, and then there's a table, and then there's a chair over there, and then you're over there. And it seems like we're separate. And it keeps that. It's that independent idea, and it's really kind of a delusion, but it's also very necessary function, because like we talked about, the ego is the reason we're here, really. I mean, we wouldn't have been able to survive without it, because it's the part of our mind that allows us to adapt to our circle of friends. It allows us to adapt in the classroom. It allows us to initially adapt to the family and fit in and be part of the group. And we know we're not solitary animals like lions. We're social animals. Mm-hmm. So it's really important that we fit in and that we behave in an acceptable manner, whatever that means for our culture, right? Mm-hmm. It could mean many different things, but what the ego also does is it has us believe that that's all that there is to us. Mm-hmm. And so when we talked about the part of our mind the ego, what the ego decided really early on wasn't going to allow you to survive, whatever that was, being weak. Remember we talked about that? Mm-hmm. Being smart. So it's not just, you know, the negative or dark parts of people. It's like being smart. People made fun of you. So you put that, you know, in the shadow, or you suppress that, repress that. Everything the ego decided based on what its interpretation was of its surroundings was not going to help you survive, fit in, be loved, be liked, be accepted, goes in the shadow. Mm. Or what Jung called the unconscious. And he coined that term, unconscious mind. So what the ego does geniusly without our awareness is it projects the shadow, projects it outward. So all the contents that it decided, like, don't be like that because people aren't going to like you. You're going to die alone, mm-hmm. right? If you're like that. So don't be like, and all that gets projected. And we see it in the people we date, in the people we work with, in our family, everywhere. And so what the most success a client can have first, I mean, and this is just step one, is to start to see the projection. Mm-hmm. Rather than seeing as there's all men are jerks.
Right.
Right. I'm just coming up with
or them. I can't all trust anyone or.
Yes. Go on.
Well, I mean, and this is something that I've kind of figured out, you know, in a sort of different way over the last few years, is that, you know, the stories that we tell ourselves. I mean, here's an expression, the way I have explained it to clients at times is, okay, so if I think you're a jerk and you're going to hurt me, reject me, whatever, how am I going to act? I'm going to act defensive. I'm going to act like you're a jerk. I'm going to be standoffish. And then in turn, how are you going to respond? you're going to kind of be a jerk, right? So it becomes, I projected it. I created it. When if I can stop myself and watch how I project events of the past, like I got hurt by someone named Leslie, you know? So
yep.
I'm projecting, you know.
Oh, you did really?
No. But
oh, good.
No, but I may have actually, but but if I project that, well, I got to protect myself because she's going to hurt me because this other one, I'm projecting something onto you that doesn't belong to you. It belongs in the past.
Yes.
And, but I'm also creating that reality because I'm treating you as if it's going to happen. And then, so it does.
Brilliantly illustrated, really. And what you're talking about now, what you're getting into is conditioning. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's classical conditioning, there's operant conditioning, and then there's, ego conditioning. So what's tricky about conditioning is that it's happening consciously and unconsciously. So you just gave the perfect example of this is what's happened to me before. Now, what's the ego's job? Because it only has to protect.
Yeah.
Yes. So what's the ego going to do? Warn you.
Right.
Be careful. I know this person seems genuine, but you remember the last time you trusted someone and you remember the last four people that did this and that, and you just be careful. And so, as you said, you are acting in accordance with that expectation that this person's going to hurt you. They're going to let you down. The ball's going to drop any second. You're going to find out that they're really awful, even though they're just faking it and being nice right now. And then that's infiltrating your attitude, your thoughts, your actions, which are just extensions of each other. And then you're making it happen. And then when the other person, like you said, is responding to you, and then they do say like, okay, we'll see you later. Jeez. Yeah,
you're being a jerk.
And then you're like, see, I told you they were going to leave.
Yeah.
And this is all going on when you were talking about the ordinary person. It's they're not aware of it. They're only seeing that this is another jerk. I should have seen it sooner, you know, and it becomes, like you said, a self-fulfilling prophecy and a pattern because it's really the undercurrent. No matter consciously people say, okay, well, I'm going to go get some positive affirmations. Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm going to post them on my mirror. I used to do this and I'm going to think this and I'm going to sit down. And I'm going to think I am worthy or I am this. And it's not changing that undercurrent. It's not impacting what we know as the unconscious assumptions. So that's why people get so frustrated because they do years and years and years and years of self-development but yet they're still like in mud.
Yeah.
And I was there. That's how I know. So it took me years to understand these ideas intellectually before I was really applying them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for example, for me to see someone that triggers me for whatever reason, it doesn't even matter because they didn't call me back, because they said something snarky, because they embarrassed me. I mean, whatever the trigger was about, it took me forever to see that my judgment of them, because the judgment, that's where the hook is, right?
Yeah.
That was me projecting. And for me to see someone and say, oh, that's my projection. Mm-hmm. Like, this person's just kind of an actor.
Right.
In my life. But like, the, what I see, that, that judgment that's over is like this veil overlaying mm-hmm. them, that my mind is, it's the way the ego gets rid of it. Like, that's not me.
Right.
Right. That's not me. Yeah. That's that person. That person's a jerk. I'm a good person. I'm good. They're bad. And this was Jung's entire, the crux of his work was that, that, that good, what we call good and evil, exists in every one of us. Mm-hmm. And that if we live by our egos only, and what we're doing is over-identifying with the, what we, how the ways we consider ourselves to be good, and completely, like you said, repressing everything, all those ideas about we can't be those things or we won't survive. We won't be loved. Everyone will leave us. We won't have any friends. Mm-hmm. We won't get invited to parties. His goal in individuation was to make ourselves whole and embrace the parts of us that we're denying. So like, if someone is, I mean, give me an example of someone, you know, doing a hurtful behavior in dating or in a relationship.
Well, you know, one you see a lot now is ghosting.
Yes. Yes. So that's a great one. So ghosting. So if I'm really angry because some guy was chatting me up and, you know, flirting and being nice to me and leading me to believe we were going to eventually actually have a date, and then just like falls off the planet, like just radar. What do they call that? Falls off the radar. Mm-hmm. I could just say, oh, why is everyone such a jerk? Why can't people just be straightforward? Or why couldn't he, why did he lead me on? What was the point? Mm-hmm. And you know what, why do people just a text? And if he had no intention of dating me, why didn't he just tell me? And I'm just angry. It's like, I would have to look at, well, where have I right. let someone else down before? And I didn't mean to. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to hurt that person, but I didn't feel chemistry, or maybe I did feel chemistry, but I just ran away because I have issues, or who knows what my reason is. The point is, we have a tendency to think about and notice and focus on how other people hurt us and disappoint us and let us down. But we conveniently ignore or justify that we do that to people too. And we really don't know that we've even hurt them. Tom, you could have devastated numerous women and literally be sitting here right now and have no knowledge of it. And the reason why is because you didn't, I'm serious, because whatever you did, you didn't mean to be hurtful. You right. didn't have a personal vendetta against right. them. You thought they were perfectly good company or good people, but just, you're just like, yeah, just, you know, and we kind of just like expect people to understand. Mm-hmm. Well, don't we? I mean,
yeah.
it's.
Yeah. Well, so, or we're just so self-involved that we don't even really always think about how the other person is experiencing it. Maybe. I don't know. I think that does happen. But yeah, we can be pretty unaware of how other people experience us. You know?
Yes. It's not because we're trying to be self-absorbed It's just that we just kind of are a lot of times, because that's the remember, the ego always directing us to back to our me, survive at any cost.
Yeah.
So it really is a function that we have to unlearn in a way. And,
where does one of the things that I'm thinking about as I'm listening to you is, where does not taking things personally fit into this? You know,
that is a great question. There, nothing really is personal. Mm-hmm. When we really understand projection, let's see it this way. I can look at Oprah and say, oh, isn't she amazing? Oh my gosh, she's my favorite. She's so wise, and she's just has all the answers, and she's just so, you know, has the best advice. And I love her. She's just such a mother figure. Mm-hmm. And you could look at Oprah and say, what? She's so self-centered, and she's all, you know, about her favorite things, and she's got all this money. And I mean, like, so we're looking at the same person. You and I are looking at the same person, and I'm seeing one thing and you're seeing something completely different.
Yeah.
That's projection. So are either one of us really seeing Oprah directly?
Yeah, no, probably not.
No. And this is what's so fascinating, is Jung developed this model of the psyche 100 years ago. And he presented it as this model of the psyche. This is how we experience what we call our reality. This model is creating what we call our reality, or our results, or our outcomes. And neuroscience, the most recent neuroscience today, has completely backed it up. And it you know, there's something called the double slit experiment. If you ever have time to Google it, it's like a 7-minute video. And it's mind blowing, because, you know, when 100 years ago, when Jung started delving into these uncharted territories that were not scientifically measurable at that time, everyone called him crazy. His colleagues didn't respect him, and they because they didn't want to. Who wants to be asked a question that they don't know the answer to?
Right.
Right. So Jung was really bold, because he went there. And here we are 100 years later, and now it is scientifically measurable, and it's a trip. So what the double slit experiment says, I hope you can't hear those dings, because I'm on a group text. And,
yeah, I don't hear them. I don't hear dings.
Okay, good. What the double slit experiment says, in essence, is, when you look at a chair and you look away from the chair, it ceases to exist. So I know that's way trippy, but when you think about it from a scientific point of view, molecules are collapsing into the form of what we call matter, based on your perception. That's really the double slit experiment in one sentence. There's a lot more of an explanation scientifically for it, but Jung's saying the same thing, that when you have a relationship with someone, when you're dating someone, you do not have direct access to them. The only thing that you have direct access to is your own mind and your own perception, your own interpretation of who you think this person is. because you could go to dinner with tonight with someone, and tomorrow you could call me and say, I had the best time. This lady was so funny. She was so fun. I was rolling on the floor. She was great. And I could say, that person is so boring. You thought she was fun? So it's just, who they are is only who we see.
Right.
Or what we see about them.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to come back to your question. When we really get that, is anything personal?
No. No.
I mean, it truly isn't.
It's personal in that we created it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But not, you know, well, the first thing that comes to mind is rejection. So, like, I'm a single guy. I was on a dating app recently, and there was someone I really wanted to date. Attractive, read her profile, had a lot of stuff in common, messaged her, and, you know, got this response, you know, I appreciate it, but I got to be honest, I'm not interested. And there would have been a time when I would have been devastated over something. Mm-hmm. Like that.
Yep. But,
you know, I mean, it didn't hurt, you know, I mean, it has nothing to do with me. It's about her preferences or whatever. And it has nothing to do with me, who I am, whether I'm good enough or not, you know, it just is completely unrelated. But it took me a long time to get to the point where I could. And, you know, when you're talking about how and I'm going to use my words, you know, having intellectually the knowledge of something as opposed to internalizing it is what I would call it, experiencing it firsthand, internalizing it. For me, what really made all the difference, because I've had knowledge of my past and things that I've gone through and the messages, like the shadow stuff, for a long, long time before my behavior actually changed. But it changed when I allowed myself to experience the emotions and to stop avoiding them and to let the emotions that had piled up and collected allowed myself to just experience them and let them pass through me.
Mm-hmm.
And then now they're not holding me back anymore. That's why that rejection, if you could even, I wouldn't even call it that at this point. She just wasn't interested. Big deal. You know, like, but 10 years ago, man, oh my God, what's wrong with me? You know what? It would have been like a neurotic tailspin.
Yeah. And well, you know, Jung called emotions psychological energy. Mm. So because he believed that we need that energy to transform. So if you think about, I had someone, a client message me recently, and she said, I'm going through a really hard time. I'm going through a breakup. This is difficult. I'm dealing with a lot of difficult emotions. And I said to her, I know this is going to sound strange, but that's actually a good thing. Because that energy is an opportunity. Mm-hmm. It's an opportunity that you need that energy. You need to harness it and use it in an intentional way, in a directional way. Mm-hmm. Right now, it just feels like negative scattered emotion that you can't control, but you need it. Think about someone who's just sitting in a chair staring off into space, and they're just like, duh, they're not happy. They're not sad. They're not angry. They're not anything. There's nothing to use there. Mm-hmm. It's just too neutral. There's no movement. Mm-hmm. So it, and that's why, you know, heartbreak, as difficult as heartbreak is, it is as useful and as much of an opportunity as it is difficult. Mm-hmm. It's a synonymous, which is counterintuitive to think of it that way, but if you need the energy for transformation, and what you just said about what changed for you was that the emotions, you were allowing yourself to feel them. Well, you're talking about conditioning again. Mm-hmm. And what is the number one most powerful conditioning agent? Emotions. Mm-hmm. Because people don't want a relationship. They want to feel a certain way. People don't want a lot of money. They want to feel how they think they're going to feel when they have a lot of money. People don't want to avoid heartbreak. They want to avoid feeling whatever that mm-hmm. awful, horrible feeling, they're avoiding that. So we act, the ego, again, ego conditioning, always directs us towards pleasure and comfort and away from pain and discomfort. It does it automatically. It doesn't require thinking or learning. So when you said, I am going to make a conscious decision to feel this pain, even though it sucks, mm-hmm. I'm going to let myself feel it. You are no longer avoiding it. Right. And therefore, by not avoiding it, now you're taking actions that you wouldn't have normally taken because you're not afraid of the emotion.
Thanks for listening to The Path to Authenticity. If you'd like to learn more about our guest, you can find links in the show notes or visit our website at thepathtoauthenticity.com. If you're interested in becoming a sponsor, if you have a suggestion for a topic, or you know someone who would make a great guest, email the show at thepathtoauthenticity@gmail.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. If you know someone else who would enjoy the show or even just a particular episode, please share it with them. Every little bit helps. If you're not already a subscriber, please consider becoming one wherever it is you choose to listen. You can find the show on Patreon, where by becoming a patron, you can hear episodes before they're released publicly. You can gain access to supplemental content. There are other benefits in the various tiers. Visit patreon.com/thepathtoauthenticity. Join our Facebook community or follow the show on Instagram, both at The Path to Authenticity. We also have a YouTube channel. You can connect with us on Twitter or Pinterest. To hear the songs from this and every episode, you can find the Path to Authenticity playlist on Spotify. Obviously, there are a lot of ways you could be spending your time, so I appreciate you spending some of it here with me. I'm Tom Gentry. Thanks for listening. Be nice.
Big Dread, honeybee.
The Path to Authenticity is powered by Equivox. For digital marketing and web design services, visit equivox.com.